Hello again and welcome back. The Railway Exchange Building in downtown St. Louis is 100 years old, 21 stories high, and once the city's tallest building. It was a Christmas destination for generations when it housed Famous Bar downtown, then Macy's. People went there to shop and to see the Christmas windows display. Since Macy's vacated the building last year, its future has been in doubt. Now a joint project has been launched to give the building new life. Downtown St. Louis, once known as the Partnership for Downtown St. Louis, is working with the Sam Fox School of Design and Visual Arts at Washington University to develop a reuse plan for the 1.2 million square foot building. Joining me in studio to talk about the project, all from the Fox School at WashU, Assistant Professor Catalina DeFrasis, Caitlin Milligan, and Michael Polite. They are students at the school. Folks, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Catalina, let me start with you. Why is this reuse project so important, do you think?
I think that given the context of St. Louis as a shrinking city and the change in the population trend that the downtown is seeing today, the understanding of this as a possibility of having a new life to this building that is so important to St. Louis is something that inspires us and gets us into this imagination of possibilities that downtown can have. So I think that is a perfect timing for us as a school to have the student thinking about a new life for a building that was so important to St. Louis until now.
How were you and the Fox School brought into this?
Actually, it was Downtown Partnership, the one that thought about having a competition at first, and they wanted to launch an international competition. But then they thought about first bringing it to WashU and having the students test for ideas. I think that was a very very nice idea because the students have a very fresh way of seeing things. They haven't been contaminated with what a realtor will think or what how a cost will affect the project. And that's what they wanted to see. They have very good firms here in St. Louis that they could give them real. And that was not what they wanted. They wanted to see something that was more, I would say, experimental, innovative. And that's why we did the studio as a call for proposals. So it is not a typical studio, but it is a studio that calls for ideas, which is a nice thing in architecture.
Caitlin, it sounds like you have carte blanche to pretty much do whatever you want to do.
Yes, but, at the same time, there are some restrictions. One of them was the historic facade, which was constructed in 1914, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It needed to stay there. We could not touch it. We needed to not only preserve it, but also make it a part of your project. And so having a project that is completely separate from the facade doesn't always work. It kind of alienates the project from the facade. And so taking it, making it a part of your project and really integrating that in there was one of the restrictions that we had. So it wasn't a completely blank slate.
Was that a tough thing to have to do?
We all, I think, resisted it at the very beginning because we wanted a blank slate. We didn't want to really involve the facade. But after a while, we started looking at it a little bit differently when we started putting some more realistic ideas into our building. We're like, maybe we could really integrate this facade into our design.
Are you a St. Louisan?
No, I'm from Colorado.
Colorado. Michael?
Yeah.
Are you a St. Louisan?
I am.
All right.
Well, I'm from Washington, Missouri, so it's 40 minutes out, but I'm around.
Close enough. So you have a different kind of look at this building because you've been familiar with it, I'm sure.
Yeah, the culture around the building, there's a lot there when it comes to stadiums and restaurants and that downtown culture. With offices around there and also apartments. So I'm kind of used to going from stadium to stadium or stadium to the downtown area down there. So.
Where are you in the project at this point?
Well, in the project, we just recently finished our drawings. But in the project, I'm investigating, structure and different things and how I can construct this thing because we're about to build our 1/16th physical model. And going from drawings to model is kind of complicated at times because you have a digital model that you've been working on, but now you got to make it stand within your physical model. So So that's kind of where I'm at. And then my program is established within the building, and sculpting the building is done. Now it's just trying to figure out the minor details.
Well, what is the biggest challenge in this whole project for you?
The square footage. It's 1.2 million square feet. So trying to establish multiple programs within it that can work together is the most complicated thing, I think.
Kathleen, is that what you're finding that your students are saying, that this is the big problem?
Oh, yeah. They were scared to death.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So it was shocking when they started to understand what was how to deal and how to tackle this 1.2 million. Now, as they move into the process, their ideas took over, and then they could do it. But at the beginning, it was something that hindered them from moving forward. I think that, again, because when the partnership came to talk to us, they gave us such a freedom, such a nice opportunity. And one of the things that they said was, we will be okay if you only leave 250,000. So 250,000 will be enough for us to run the building and have it as a operational unit.
So only come up with a plan that would utilize a quarter of the space of
even
the building.
Even less than a quarter.
Less than a quarter of the space. All right.
Yeah, so that was a very interesting premise. So that when the students started to realize that they could empty some of the building by removing slabs or cutting more courtyards or having a different kind of space, because again, you know, the maximum ceiling height was restrictive of some of the uses that they were trying to imagine, then everything started to flow.
Right. You mentioned a competition. Is this a competition? Will one of these designs from our own Sam Fox School emerge as what is ultimately going to happen to the Railway Exchange Building?
Well, we hope so. It was, again, it was a call for ideas. The partnership wanted to have an international competition. Maybe they will after this. But this was a call for ideas, which means that the ideas are going to be brought. And we have a grant for next year that the ULI put together. And they are going to look at the projects and see feasibility. So they're going to talk to the students, and they're going to see what's next. So I think that in the if you combine all these opportunities together, I think that something great can happen.
What an opportunity, Caitlin, for young you're all graduate students, correct, in
correct.
Architecture school. What an opportunity for
you. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your ideas a little more specifically. You have kind of free range except for the facade. Money is apparently not much of an object.
Not at the beginning, because Catalina says that really puts a huge restraint on what you do. Yeah. Instead of just starting to design formally, programmatically, and in other ways, you also just are like, well, no, this is only going to cost so much per square feet. I can't do this. And so you have to turn that part of your brain off a little bit. And so what most of us did in our studios, we kind of designed in two tracks. We did a formal study of the building, like ripping out floor plates, making a courtyard a little bit bigger, or cutting out part of the walls. And another one was actually programmatic studies. What is in downtown? What needs to be downtown? So for me personally, I stepped into the shoes. I am a millennial. I would love to live downtown. But if I did, what do I need to survive down there? I can't hop in a car and drive 30 minutes to a general store to get what I need. I don't have a whole lot of time, and I don't have a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. And while Macy's is a great store, I can't really afford to shop there for my daily needs. And it also isn't the most responsible way to fill up half the building. And so what I'm proposing is a mix of retail, residential, performing arts, bars and restaurants, and they take up just smaller portions of the building. And so you're not trying to do a one solution fits all. And the programs that are, especially in retail, that I'm proposing are places that I would afford to shop at. So like a Target, a Whole Foods, a pharmacy. And another way that you take that, another layer, is not taking a 250,000 square foot big box store and trying to shove it downtown. Looking at precedents of how they did take those big buildings and put them in an urban context. So they scale them down to 80,000 square feet. They don't offer all the services, but the bare bones of the building is still there.
So, and you're doing this again with the constraint of the facade we've already mentioned.
Correct.
And you're only looking at 250,000 square feet.
Mine is more. I didn't go down that far. I didn't necessarily need to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I did take out a couple of floor plates. I did carve out a little bit more space.
And that's okay, Catalina, that's okay if they take more than the 250,000?
Yes, of course. That was the minimum that they could operate with. They should be responsive to the use that they have identified and the needs that downtown has. And then with that, determine the square footage that is required.
Right. Michael, let me turn to you. I want some specifics, if you would, on what you're thinking about for the Railway Exchange Building.
Yeah, I guess when I first entered the Railway Exchange Building, I was really looking forward to its potential as you entered it. So I was really looking forward to it. I was very excited about it, and I heard there was an interior light well that I wanted to see. So as we started coursing through the building, I could tell there was a lot of mass there. And then as we went up, I peered into the interior light well, and there's a lot of maintenance things sitting on the ground, you know, like air conditioning units and different things like that. So the potential that was there, I feel like is kind of, I guess, mitigated by these things, that are sitting in there. So it was a little disappointing. So I guess the stance that I first took was how to get light into the structure as much as possible. So I started with cutting away a lot of square footage. You can't touch the facade, right? So so that was kind of a deterrent when it came to light penetration. But at the same time, if you take a lot of floor slab away, I feel like you can let a lot of light in. So kind of one of my strategies is getting light from, you know, the 12th floor down to the first floor. And how do you do that?
I'm trying to envision this somehow without actually being able to see what you're doing. But are you talking about an atrium kind of thing where you take out floors so that you have a much more wide open space?
Yeah. Yeah, it's essentially an atrium. But I guess I studied the sun's angle. And where it comes from, what solstice and equinox. So as that penetrates the building, what angle does that penetrate the building? And what is its maximum potential for light penetration as the sun courses through the downtown area? So it also relates to the buildings around it and how tall they are and where. But also, so that's my initial approach to the building. The secondary approach is more programmatic. And that's relating to the downtown area with the stadiums and different things like that, and potentially plugging in an indoor stadium.
Figuring out the path of the sun and the solstice and all the rest, there's a lot more to architecture than I think most people realize, Catalina.
Well, it's something that the students learn at WashU and is part of their curriculum. So being able to apply what they have learned in other classes in our studio, I think is something exciting. So they can realize that it is not something that they have to learn. It's something that they can apply in their design. And that becomes, you know, very clear in our studio.
Yeah, it's also seems clear that this has a very much a millennial touch to it, and that is the concept, as I've read about and understand it, is that this is really a building for the millennial generation. Michael, that's
– yeah.
Caitlin has already alluded to that. Mm-hmm. You're looking at it the same way.
Most definitely, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of offices downtown, and the just the environment kind of I feel like it inhabits that stance. Mm-hmm.
What about – we've talked about the preserving the historical integrity of the facade of the building. What about on the inside? Is there any issue there, Caitlin?
No, there isn't. The facade is pretty much the only thing that we need to protect. We have technically, we do have free reign to redesign the entire interior. However, most of us did decide to work with the existing structural grid and try to just manipulate what's already there instead of redesigning all of it. But there are some proposals that are going to happen that have just disregarded all the interior conditions.
So unlike Michael, you're not going to be tearing out various floors to give a little more
I am. Yes. But my reasoning for it is different from him. He's looking to let more light in. I'm looking to kind of open up the interior space. And so you don't want to shop in a retail store where the ceiling's only 8 feet high above you. You need a little bit more room to breathe.
Sure. I'm fascinated by the residential component that, that you have raised. I mean, this is a fully integrated community is what it sounds like it would be to me. But give me some sense of what you're thinking about with regard to the residences.
Of course. So as a millennial moving downtown to St. Louis, you know, there are a plethora of one-bedroom studio apartments down there already. However, that's not always a feasible option financially. So you look for roommates and apartments with 2 to 3 bedrooms. And so instead of putting studios and one-bedroom apartments in the residential component of my building, I'm looking at 2 to 3 bedrooms where people can rent out a room and then live as a community.
Have you worked out in your mind or in any sense the costs of living in a place like this? I mean, you've already alluded to the fact that it can be expensive for millennials, young people getting started. Is part of your plan what it would cost to
rent a place? It's always in the back of my mind. But once again, when you get bogged down by the financial parts of it, it really holds you back from just taking a design and pushing it as far as you can.
Michael, what's bogging you down?
Structure. Yeah, as I tear things out, it's structure becomes a big issue. And plug in these programs that I want in the building, because I have a residential area on the top of my building, and below the building is, or in the bottom floors of the building, there's another program that's not very good with the residential on top. So I'm trying to figure out structure first and foremost. So,
how long have you been working on this?
I guess since, let's see, August. Yeah. So we've had a long time to work on it. But then again, you know, 1.2 million square feet, it's just, you know, you take it when you're used to working at 80,000 square feet at the most, it's trying to plug your programs and sculpt this building in a way that, of 1.2 million, it's complicated.
And you've been working on it too, Caitlin, since August?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Catalina, your challenge to the students, when you brought this up to them, I mean, how did you approach it? Not all students, not all of your students are involved, or are they?
Well, we have a presentation at the beginning of the semester where the professors have the chance to show the students the proposal for the studio. So at that point, I talk about my research in cities like St. Louis, in post-industrial cities, and the stock of buildings that St. Louis has. So I talk about the opportunity that this brings, looking at the percentage of population increase in the age range of 25 to 34 years old. And the students, some of the students that are in my studio have been in St. Louis for a couple of years. Others have just arrived. So at that point, you know, it was August when we started, the end of August. And so the studio had a component that was a research of St. Louis as a city and understanding why the situation is what it is today. The students also have to research on the formal aspects of how to operate within a building of that size. And then they have to understand what are the needs and desires of the city. So there were like different layers that they had to go through in the building. And that was something that I tried to express from the beginning. So they knew what they were going to be up to.
You're going to hate this question, all of you. I'll just get a quick reaction to you. But, you know, why not just knock the building down and build a new one? Wouldn't that be a lot easier, Caitlin?
Yes, yes, it was. But
she's wincing, folks.
Yes, a little bit. I guess I could answer your question with another question. If it's easier to do that, why haven't you done it already, I guess? If it's easier to knock down the building and just put a brand new development, and you would have done it already. But there is something about this building, about this facade, that it's stuck in people's ribs. And mm-hmm. So let's capitalize on that. Let's make something out of that, and let's reuse this building.
Yeah. I think of the probably millions of people over the years who have watched just the Christmas displays down there in that mm-hmm. building would probably also be wincing with that question. But your answer to
it. Yeah, I was going to say there's already an established culture there within the building, mm-hmm. and there's so much there that exists. So, you know, why just destroy that non-tangible thing that's already there? And why not use that to the advantage of a, you know, a totally new program and structure within the building that that can engage the surrounding community and St. Louis as a whole.
Well, let me assure folks, I just asked that question to get your responses to it. Catalina, do you want to respond to knocking the building down?
I think that it's not a sustainable way to go. I think that Europe has a culture of trying to look at other opportunities of rebirth of buildings before knocking them down. And I think that starting to think about this in America, especially in, again, post-industrial cities where the building stock is so big and where the buildings are beautiful and solid, so they can still have years to work, I think that is a great opportunity. And that's what we were asked, and that's what we tried to do.
And Caitlin, they just don't build buildings like that
anymore,
do they?
No, they do not. And it's absolutely gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
This is all tied into kind of the City Arch River movement, the whole idea of redeveloping downtown. So this is an important component to that, another reason to get people into the city, correct?
Yeah, it is. And again, each of the students understood that through their urban analysis of St. Louis. So again, Mike has a very interesting way to see St. Louis from his perspective of sports and the way that you move through the different seasons, correct? Going from the baseball to the football, and why not the soccer in his case, correct? So Caitlin has another way of seeing the city in terms of the needs that people have today. Very, very tangential needs, correct? They need a place to shop, as you were saying. So again, I think that the projects become real as you listen to the students and start to imagine through their eyes how do they see St. Louis.
Well, what is the timetable for all of this now? We've got, let's see, I want to mention too, I almost forgot that we've got an event next week on the 10th. Do we not? Downtown St. Louis Community Event displaying student design ideas on Wednesday, December 10th from 6 to 8 p.m., of course, the Railway Exchange Building on Washington. But people have an opportunity to see what you guys have been up to. Yep. And concerning the timetable from that point on, and we only have 30 seconds, once these design ideas are put forward, what then? Where do we go?
As I said, we will have the opportunity to talk and to look with Yuli to see which of the projects is feasible in terms of other things that we haven't considered. But also, this gives an opportunity for the partnership and the developers to have new ideas, that fresh ideas, which they were asking. And I think that we try to give them.
All right. Well, we have to end it there, but this will be unfolding in the weeks and months ahead, needless to say. Thank you so much. I misidentified the location of the building. It's on Locust, not on Washington, of course. Thank you all so much, Caitlin and Catalina and Michael, for being with us. We've got a run. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with former Ferguson Mayor Brian Fletcher about his involvement in the I Love Ferguson campaign. We'll also take a look at the Affordable Care Act in light of the current open enrollment period. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.